Welcome to Showdown. I'm Mark Kaysen, and it is Wednesday. That's the 17th of April. And that little noise that I got there, that's telling me to tell you that if you would like to call in, you can call on 314-471-1968. That's 471-1968 if you'd like to talk to me about anything. If you'd like to talk about the day that Donald does not have to go into court, that's today, you can even do that. So again, 314-471-1968, and you may be interested to know, or you may know already, that Homeland Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas is no longer being impeached. That's over. That took about, it took 3 hours. I was going to say 10 minutes, but not much. It was very silly from the start, but it's really an important story. And let me talk about it here for a minute. In the first place, Mayorkas didn't do anything wrong, and nobody thinks that he did anything wrong. So the impeachment business was, as they say, performative on the part of Republicans. They were having fun. They were showing off for Donald. And it's over. Over before it started in the United States Senate. 51 votes against impeachment, and it all went away. No trial, no further activity, no impeachment. Of course, Mayorkas did absolutely nothing. He followed Joe Biden's administration. They have a policy. They have a policy at the border. He followed the policy. End of story. You can argue over the policy, but you can't argue that he did something corrupt, because he just did what he was supposed to do. He followed the leadership of his administration. No one said that he did anything illegal in terms of the way he treated people who came across the border or anything like that. Just they didn't like, the Republicans didn't like his policy, which, again, as I say, is the administration's policy. And if he went rogue and had refused to implement the policies of the administration, they wouldn't have needed to do an impeachment. Joe Biden would have removed him from Homeland Security. But that wasn't an issue. Nobody was upset about it. He did what he was supposed to do. And that's the end of the story. However, it's not the end of the story of immigration at our border. And I think it's important to get a few things clear, which really, I guess even saying that is foolish, because there are people who believe what they want. And, you know, the Republican Party essentially believes this. Tens of thousands of people are crossing that border by the hour. Enormous numbers of criminals are coming from South America into the United States, and they may be people who are coming from Europe, then go to South America, then come across the border. But in any event, that's the theory, that these enormous numbers of criminals, rapists, murderers, carjackers, building explosives, all this kind of business is happening. They're coming after us. Now, of course, the truth is, no one is coming after us. Oh, yeah, there could be one person crossing the border who comes up with some crazy idea. That could happen. That's true. But there are 320 million people in the United States Who could come up with crazy ideas? So that's not a question here. It's not a matter of immigrants who are plotting to destroy our country. In fact, it is completely the opposite. These are people who are coming across the border because they want a new life. They want a better life. They want safety. They want to earn money. They think that our streets are paved in gold. Let's put it this way. They hope that our streets are paved in gold and that they can dig up a part of it and put it in their pockets and maybe send some of it home to their relatives. These people are looking for safety and security. Exactly what everybody in the United States, mostly, presumably, would like to have here. Safety, growing wealth, a chance to do better in life, and also a chance for the children to do better in life. That is all that these people want who are crossing that border. Now, there are also people who are here. Some have been here for 10, some for 20 years. Illegally, they don't have any paperwork that allows them to be here, nor do they have the paperwork that allows them to work, although they might have fake papers. And the point is so simple. Make it legal. Make it legal for the people who have been here 10 to 20 years and who have committed no crimes and who have simply gone to work day in and day out. Make it possible for them to not only stay here, but to become citizens. Make them citizens. Not day one. I mean, make them take a test. Make them know about the country. Make them understand English. Help them to fit into the United States. Now, I've said many times that there's a way to do this that is so simple and so effective and so productive for us that it's just unbelievable that we're not doing it. And so let me back up on this for a second and tell the story this morning about Doris Kearns Goodwin. Now, most people probably know who she is. She's a famous historian, author, has written about Roosevelt, has written about Lincoln. And now she's writing a book. In fact, she's written a book. She just published it, came out today. And it's a combination of two stories. It's her family's story involving what she has done along with her husband, Richard Goodwin, and he was a speechwriter for both John Kennedy and for Lyndon Johnson. Really good guy. And that family was a family that grew up in the 1960s, like so many others, and their story as a family is basically the story of the 1960s for many people. And so she has explained all the different things that Richard Goodwin did, how he became a speechwriter, and how he came up with the idea for the Peace Corps. And it was pretty simple. He talked about it. Of course, he was in the White House. He was a speechwriter, and he talked about it. He wrote a speech that included some information about that, which was a speech that he gave. And in the end, John Kennedy and others in the administration grabbed onto this and decided it was a wonderful idea. Send American young people, college age, send them across the Atlantic to Europe and to Asia and Africa, and send them somewhere that they could have an impact on the way that a new country would emerge. Because there are a lot of countries that were just trying to get started, needed help, needed health care support, needed all kinds of things. The Peace Corps was sent there. Now, this wasn't without any danger. First of all, it was a health danger because you're in a foreign country where there are other diseases and, you know, you try to get all the shots, but maybe you can't get everything. Or, meaning you could get the shots, but maybe there aren't enough shots. Maybe some things are out there that you can't protect against. Anyway, these young people went there and some of them got sick. Some of them died. Not enormous numbers, but, you know, some did. And beyond that, these people really accomplished a great deal in the countries. And one other thing, they really advanced their own lives. They had an experience that made them different. It helped them to grow. It helped them to come, in many cases, back to the United States and find jobs and careers that made them extremely productive citizens and made them feel really good about themselves and helped them to find ways to fit in as maybe mentors to other people here in the United States. It was just a great idea. It worked perfectly. And it's been around for a very long time. And it continues to work perfectly, although there's no doubt that there are some places in the world that you can go today where you might get abducted and maybe you wouldn't have been abducted 50 years ago, but today you might be. Go to Russia, you might get abducted. In fact, you got a good chance of being abducted there because there's a value to having Americans as hostages. Now, these are the real hostages, not the made-up Donald Trump hostages in Washington, D.C. jails where these people have committed crimes and they've been found guilty or they've pled guilty. So the fact is that we have a need for young people like this here in the United States, and I think the need is at our border. I don't think there's any doubt that we could take young people, and in this case, because it's in the United States, it wouldn't have to be 22, 23, 24-year-olds. It could be, but it might be 18, 19, 20-year-olds, kids who have come out of high school, aren't ready to go to college yet, but think that they might be able to do some good, and they're willing to go to the border and help us make a difference in terms of bringing these people across the line so that they can live here and do things here that will help our country to progress. We already know that the number of families with one or two kids is so high in the United States that we're running into a problem in that sense because we really want to have a higher birth rate. And we know that a higher birth rate would come from many of these families that would come in from other countries, maybe have five, six, seven kids, and eventually fit in as brand new Americans. This could be done so simply. These people could be welcomed here. We could act as if the words on the Statue of Liberty were really something that we meant, that we care about, that we want people from other countries to come here, that we want them to fit into the United States as new citizens who would have families, who would grow up, who would expand the cultural aspects of our country because we'd learn about people coming from other places. It would be extraordinary. And the kids who would be at the border that would make the difference in helping the families to come across and ultimately fit in here, it would affect them for the rest of their lives. And we don't even know the complete extent of how that would be true. But at least in the obvious sense that they would get good relationships in terms of working with people that they don't know and finding ways to mentor people and getting the good sense, personal identity, having to come from doing good and working hard on behalf of the country. I mean, just in so many ways, it would be beneficial. It would increase the population of our country. It would increase the birth rate of our country, which we need. And all of these people coming over, honestly, would not be Democrats. That is the dumbest story that I've ever heard. That's what people say. Oh, this is just some theory of the Democratic Party. Bring them over. And then, you know, Boss Tweed from New York will take these people in and force them to work for the party. And then they'll all vote for Democrats and we'll never have another Republican president. That's nonsense. You can already see in the Hispanic population in southern Florida that they will vote for Republicans, especially when they fear that the Democrats are nothing but a bunch of commies. Because, you know, they were all with Fidel, and they think that Fidel was doing bad things to them for no reason. And, of course, we know that's not true. They did bad things in Cuba. Fidel was a brutal dictator. That's true. Only because the United States, John Kennedy, tried to kill Castro, according to various encyclopedia reports, etc., 500, 600 times, something like that. And look, if you try to kill somebody, I promise you, they won't be your friend. It sort of works like that. You know, you tell somebody, look, I'm going to kill you. Well, you know what? They don't say, oh, I love you so much. Thank you. Kill me. No, they don't. They become very angry. And if they think they need help, they may go somewhere else to get help in order to block you from killing them. And of course, Fidel did that. He went to Russia, and Russia did give him the help that he needed because, look, it suited their purpose. But let's take another quick diversion just for a moment so we can see something very important. You know, we act like we're just being bounced around by history and we don't know anything about what's going to happen next. It's not true. George Kennan was the ambassador to the Soviet Union for a long time. And in 1947, he wrote an article about the Soviet Union, and he said, and he signed this thing X, it was a famous article written for Foreign Affairs magazine, and he said, look, the Soviets are so dysfunctional. They're 100% a complete mess. They can't get anything right. Everything they do fails. All you have to do is contain them. Keep them from not expanding all the way across the globe, because if you can stop that, they'll do a lot less damage. They'll do damage to themselves, and eventually they'll blow up. And in 1991, they blew up. And there was never much doubt about it. The Soviet Union never accomplished much of anything except for to build atomic bombs. They have created enormous stockpiles of nuclear weapons. Right now, about 6,000 of those. But other than that, they've done essentially nothing. How do we know that? Well, look at their GDP. They've got like 160, 170 million, whatever it is, people. And their GDP is $1.4 trillion. Our GDP is almost $30 trillion. Ours is the largest on the planet. Theirs is almost nothing. Less than the size of Texas. Less than the size of California. Russia's nothing. Russia's never been anything. When they were the Soviet Union, they couldn't do anything. Oh, we had people here who thought maybe the Soviets could be a good thing because they talked about being fair and decent to people. They did talk about that. And some did try for that. And here in the United States, when a lot of that was going on, there were people here who were eating out of trash cans. And so there was a reason to look around for help. But don't worry. They weren't going to get it from Russia because Russia didn't know what they were doing. They just failed at everything. Oh, that's interesting. Sort of sounds like that guy that they work with right now, Donald Trump. But okay, let's leave him out of it for a second. But look, here's the thing. Russia is a complete failure as a country. And here is one for you. And I won't necessarily say Trump. Let's leave him out. Just the Republicans say that Joe Biden has killed our petroleum industry. Absolutely, completely, 100% false. In fact, the United States is self-sufficient in energy, and we currently produce more energy, we drill more oil than any other country in the world. And at any time in anyone's history, including our history. In other words, you know that silly drill baby drill nonsense? Forget it. Because Joe Biden, it's not him, but our country, is drilling. We're drilling oil. We produce a ton of oil. If you go and look at the statistics, the charts of oil production, you will see oil on a straight upward course all the way through Obama, all the way into the beginning of Trump. And the irony is, the funny part, is that it dropped during COVID when Trump was president. But to be fair, it was because of COVID. But forget fair, because you can't be fair when you talk to Trump and those people, because frankly, they tell a story that is so false that the United States does not produce oil, and we produce the most oil of anybody in the world, that the United States is not energy sufficient, self-sufficient, and we are. We are totally self-sufficient in terms of the oil that we produce. I mean, that's all factual. How do you know it's factual? You go to United States government statistics, the same statistics that everybody uses on the left and on the right. It doesn't matter which side. Whatever side it is, I promise you, the numbers are correct. And those numbers show exactly what I've just told you, that those people who are producing oil are producing it at record clips. It's that factual. It's that simple. That's what's happening. We are energy self-sufficient. It's just a fact. Now, yes, oil prices go up and down, and they go up and down based on worldwide supply and demand, and no one is in control of that, as like any market. Markets are free, generally, across the world. And in fact, they're so efficient that the Chinese communists figured out early on, after reacquainting themselves with the West, following Nixon and, you know, that rapprochement, that's what started China on this path to producing things that we buy and that other people around the world buy, and that's okay. It's not killing us. Our GDP is twice theirs. But we worry about everything, and we know almost nothing. Oh, you could. You could know everything if you just went and looked it up, but people don't. They believe what someone else tells them. Now, you may not want to accept that the United States is producing oil at record clips right now under Joe Biden. But look it up and then you'll know it's true. So assume for a moment it is true, but you don't even have to do that. Because my point is that our country is fabulously successful compared to every other country in the world. No one's even close to us. Not even near us. We're the best. So with that in mind, here we are worried about some people who are crossing our border who only want to come here for one reason. They would like to make some money. They would like to settle their families here in peace and safety. And they would like to become American citizens. And I don't care if they're 10,000 or 50,000 or 100,000 of them coming across the border or trying to. There's really only one thing we have to do. We have to be sure that we know who's coming over. You know, like, write their name down. I promise you, they'll give you their name if you don't threaten to deport them and separate their families and cause them, you know, a lifetime of pain. Oh, they'll tell you everything if you just let them know that you're here to bring them in and to help them. And then what you do, because we don't have maybe enough people to go down and work on the border. But we do have kids. We have kid power. 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. They'll come out of college, and they will love the opportunity to go to the border, make some money, help these people, and then find out the real value that comes from helping people. And at the same time, helping our country. That's the point. Help the United States while you're helping these people come across the border. You wouldn't have anybody talking about caravans. You wouldn't have any people talking about vicious murderers crossing the border. And let me also say again, and you can read about this on my website, talkstl.net. talkstl.net. You go to the website and then you go to the place that says reading room. And you scroll down and there's an article there and it tells all about, it's a university article, it's peer reviewed, and it tells all about the low level of crime among people who come here from other countries and the substantially higher level of crime that exists among our people who were born and live here. It's just a fact. It's as much of a fact as the oil information. It's all factual. It's all guaranteed true. You look it up, you'll find it's true. The people who come here do not commit crimes. They are peaceful, hopeful, that they will find a way to fit in here and have a successful life. Now, they even know that they're being hunted down here and that they're not wanted. They know that. Of course, they're not stupid. And they pay a lot of money to get smuggled into here, which wouldn't even happen if we just dropped this dumb policy. Just get rid of it. Just tell them, come on, here you go. Not only will we welcome you here, but we could send send companies over there to bring them here. This would be so simple. You wouldn't be in any risk at all. And instead of them coming over here and causing chaos at the border, they would just be crossing the border very peacefully and quietly. We'd get their names. We'd identify first where they're going to live down by the border, while the young people from high school would come down there and help them to fit in. And then we'd help them to move across the United States to various places where they want to be. Are you worried that there's too many people in New York City? Fine. Put them in Wyoming. I'm telling you, we could do this so easily. This is not a problem. This is just like Richard Goodwin in 1960 saying, you know, we could send Americans around the world and help other countries and build relationships with these countries that would be really productive. But here in the United States, we could even accomplish more than that. It wouldn't be for another country. It would be for us. And then there would be all of these kids. And eventually it would be millions. We could send a million right now down to the border. I guarantee it. And over time, it would be millions of these young people down there, and nobody would even think of it after a year or two or three, because it would be so normal for us to do this. And we'd be populating our country with hardworking Americans from South America, but Americans who would like to be Americans in our sense, the United States of America. They would fit, it would be great, and listen, they wouldn't all come here wanting to be wild-eyed liberals. I promise they wouldn't, because there are some people who would say, I guarantee it, I don't want to pay that much in taxes. I'm working hard. I want to pay less tax. Other people would say, like maybe people on the left, I work hard, but if I pay taxes, it'll go towards all the various things that we have in the country that benefit us. Highways, airports, new train systems that go 500, 600, 700 miles an hour. All kinds of things. You and I don't even know what's coming 50, 100 years from now. But I'll tell you this, you populate the country with people who then become extremely well-educated, and I guarantee you, they will fit in just like my parents and your parents and grandparents and everybody else that came across here from some other country. It's just too simple. It's too simple. It's too obvious. And it's written on the Statue of Liberty. Because we really say that we believe in this. This isn't even an idea that we've come up with in 2024. This is an idea from 200 years ago. We've done this. We know it works. All we have to do is get over our racism. That's not easy. I understand. Donald Trump said, I made it a half an hour. I can go back to Trump. Donald Trump said, if you bring these immigrants from Africa to the United States, they will poison the blood of our country. I mean, the only thing he hasn't done is provide the proper sourcing for that phrase, because we all know that it was a phrase that was developed by one of his great heroes, and that's, of course, Adolf Hitler. Okay. How would you like to have something really great for dinner and forget about all this political business? Well, I can't forget about the political business. I enjoy it too much. In fact, nothing I like more than walking around with my telephone tuned into MSNBC so I can hear what's actually going on in the world. But you may just want to go have some dinner. So what you do is you go to 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road to Wendy's. You knock on the door and you ask for Ben. You don't have to ask for Ben, but you can. And then you go in and you have terrific wings, fabulous smoked meats, baby backed ribs. Baby back ribs are great. I love baby back ribs. I love them. They're great, healthy, excellent, good food, protein, pizza, onion rings. Okay, it's not protein, but I love onion rings. They're so good. Patty melts, cheeseburgers. By the time you're through, you may weigh 1,000 pounds, but you'll love Wendy's. 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road. Ben is there. And, you know, it's just sort of like making a friend, sort of like buying a friend for the price of a meal. And then I understand there's a new one opening up very soon, a new Wendy's coming in Defiance, but I don't know the date for that because they don't tell me everything. But I do know 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road, and that is Wendy's. Now, I can also tell you what you can do if you're looking for great jewelry. You can go to 4506 Hampton, and that's Jewels on Hampton. And I promise you that Al and AJ are terrific there. And, you know, among the things that they do is they design jewelry. They're really good at it. And you can go there and look at their creations. Or maybe you're good at designing jewelry. You could go there and tell them what you want, and they'll do that for you. They're at 4506 Hampton. They buy and sell coins and jewelry, and they just have a great jewelry store. If you love jewelry, you've got to go to Jewels on Hampton. Go ask for Al or AJ, and they'll help you for sure. Because as I always say, these family-run businesses with the family people at the business, they really know how to take care of you, and they do at Jewels on Hampton. Now, after you've got the greatest jewelry that you could possibly imagine, and after you've had your watch repaired over at Jewels on Hampton, you can go to Clayton, just go another couple of exits, headed east, and you'll end up at the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton. And that is on the corner of Forsyth and Central in Clayton. And they have beautiful suits. They have terrific ties. The ties are $5. I mean, that's a fabulous price. You cannot beat that price for a tie. $5 for a tie. They are silk ties. They are colorful. And the only problem you might have is you might be like me. And you might be colorblind. But if you are, don't worry, because you can ask Jay or Nick, either one. Jay's the dad, Nick's the son. And then you've also got some great other family members working there, and they'll all help you to match the ties to your suits because they're not colorblind like I am. It's just a great place to go to buy your clothes. If you're going for a wedding, they will get you dressed for your wedding. They'll either help you if you're in a wedding party, or they'll help create the wedding party. They're just really good. They've been there in Clayton for 29 years, and I've got some people coming on here who have gone to the St. Louis Suit Company for a long time. You may be surprised when you find out who some of them are, and you'll be really interested. They'll tell you all about their experiences with the St. Louis Suit Company, but they'll be coming here for something else because they won't just be here to talk about suits. But in any event, they're just a, it's a great place. The St. Louis Suit Company, you've got to go there. Check out their ties. Don't buy a tie from Donald Trump. He'll just rip you off like he would for anything else he would do for you. And you can just buy a tie for $5. You'll love it. That's the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton. Okay, so, you know, I started with Secretary Mayorkas, who has been threatened with impeachment for months now, and it all came to a rapid end in the United States Senate today when the Democrats voted rapidly for, you know, they listened to some nonsense for a couple of hours, and then they voted 51, all Democrats, to end this thing, and it's over. Ended. I believe that Lisa Murkowski voted present. She may be the one person who voted present. I didn't see what Mitt Romney did, so I really don't know. And I will check that. But I know that Lisa Murkowski voted present, but there was no real excitement about what was happening to Mayorkas. Everybody knew that he hadn't done anything. And this was a crazy plan concocted basically by Donald Trump, who placed it in front of a bunch of crazed Republicans in the House, who then moved forward with this whole impeachment process, and it all came to nothing today in the United States Senate. Well, for good reason. Now, I've given you some alternatives that we could use in dealing with the border, because I heard Mayorkas and I heard others, and they said really almost the same thing that Republicans are saying, that we could put into place these border protection policies to stop people from coming across. And they might still force their way across to some degree, but we would block them. And we would be foolish to do it, because I'm telling you that the best thing we could do as a country would be to just tomorrow start passing out the leaflets. Welcome to the United States of America. Wherever you live, just come on across that border, because we're ready for you to come here and have a great life and become productive citizens in the United States. I hate to tell you how much good that would do for us as a country around the world, not to mention the fact that it would have an additional side effect of putting pressure on trying to end systemic racism in the United States. But of course, we know that there are some people who don't want that. There's some people who are white supremacists, and they would like to see all of this possible immigration ended, because they wake up in the middle of the night sweating the same way that Donald does all day when he's in a courtroom where they're about to slam him into a jail cell. But, you know, the point is, you won't have to sweat it. You won't have to even think about it, because the people will come and they will do great here, and our young people will help them to fit in at the border. And I'll tell you something, if it ever happens, it would be the smartest thing that we ever did. But then again, there's some people out here who aren't that smart. So let's talk about some people who aren't so smart. Let's talk about Senator Tom Cotton. Now, there's a brilliant man, Harvard educated, from the South, acting as if, you know, he's some kind of good old boy. But at any rate, here's what he would like to do. He came up with this in the last couple of days, and he said it, I guess maybe he said it when he was excited, But that's okay. He thought about it overnight after people started attacking him, and he just doubled down on it and then tripled down on it. And what he's saying is that protesters who block traffic should be thrown off of bridges to their death, and that before we throw them off, we should rip their skin off. This is a highly educated United States senator who has come up with this brilliant policy for us. Of course, he's a Republican. You know, I don't know what their problem is. But at any rate, let's tear the skin off these demonstrators. Now, I know that there were some people in the last couple of days who talked about the frustration of having demonstrators blocking traffic. And honestly, I'm not saying everybody should block traffic. And I'll tell you this, to be truthful, I've never blocked traffic. I've never been in a demonstration that blocked traffic. I was in demonstrations. I was 17, 18 years old at UCLA, and I participated in a demonstration. I was in a lineup of hippies, and across from us was a line of police, and they had their sticks out, and they came out with a bullhorn and said, we're going to get you in 60 seconds. And we waited around for about 45 seconds and then started to run. In fact, during that 45 seconds, I walked down the line of police and took video of them with one of those old video cameras, and I still have it. Of course, I don't know what kind of shape it's in these days, 60 years later, I guess, 50 years later, whatever it is. Anyway, I've got the film, but no sound, but I've got the film, and the police did rush us, and we were young, so we ran, and we escaped, mostly. I saw a person get whacked on the head, but anyway, there were lots of ways to demonstrate. I did not stand out in front of traffic. I never did, and I haven't demonstrated in years because, I mean, we demonstrate in this country in other ways. We speak up. We speak up and speak out, and we tell what we think, and we do all kinds of things in our lives that could be considered part of a movement toward social justice in America. And hopefully we have lots of people participating in that. And no question, George Soros helps to fund those operations. Yes, he does. He's not the devil. He's a brilliant commodity trader who loves to make profits. He's a capitalist, and he's very successful as a commodity trader. And then he takes some of that money, just like other billionaires do in this country, and he gives it away. And in his case, he gives it to groups that promote the cause of social justice. Doesn't sound all that bad to me. Sounds like a great idea. But at any rate, a lot of people say he's the devil, but he's not. And that's the end of that story, except to say that being George Soros and supporting social justice efforts and a little bit of demonstrating here and there, and then if you end up out in traffic, blocking traffic, it's not going to be forever, and people will get where they need to go. And I understand there could be a kid in there. It might be in an ambulance trying to get to the hospital. And so it would be very helpful if the demonstrators would be alert to the potential for people who need to get through traffic on an emergency basis. I understand it doesn't necessarily happen that way now, but we should do that because we don't want people to get hurt because of a demonstration like that. But if you're a half an hour late to work or school, it won't kill you, but, you know, there are a lot of things that you could do. In any event, Tom Cotton wants those people thrown off of bridges, and he wants their skin peeled off. Oh, well. That's one sort of decency. And then there are other kinds that are supported by people like George Soros, who doesn't want to take anybody's skin off and who does not want to push you off of a bridge and have you murdered. And speaking of murder, Carrie Lake in Arizona would like to murder you. She's recommending that all of her people strap on Glocks, you know, the guns, and bring them around wherever they can take them and shoot you if you're doing things that they don't like. That's a good Republican idea coming out of Arizona, where also they promote 164-year laws that actually, it's not even what everybody says it is. It's not even a question of abortion either. There are other things involved. Apparently, and the story is coming out more and more now, that this guy who was behind these laws 164 years ago, he was involved in some really bad things, and he was trying to promote policies that would support him, his own family. In other words, he was corrupt. Okay, so it's an issue of corruption, and it's 160 years old, and honestly, we got a mess in this country, but it's not what you think. It's not the people coming across the border that they're not the mess. They don't do anything. They just go to work. And right now they go to work without documentation. But, you know, when we give them documentation, then we won't have to worry about that problem. But we know for sure that Carrie Lake wants you to strap on a gun and start killing people. Gee, that sounds like a great American policy. So explain to me, in all of this, how does this make America great again? Throwing protesters off of bridges, ripping off their skin, shooting people who you don't like because they have a different point of view than what you've got. I mean, explain to me how that makes America great again. And of course, the answer is, we know it doesn't, because we know all of this is policy that is promoted by one man. Now, it's bought into by hundreds of thousands, for sure. Maybe even some millions. Maybe people who don't quite understand what it is that this stands for, because I've heard so many people say, he doesn't mean it. Come on. Who would say that? That's just talking. Or that's just locker room talk. And that's coming into the trial very shortly because the judge has already approved that one. But, you know, it's all one man. He is a maniac. He is a sociopath. He is a very sick man. And although you can't watch him directly on tape, starting again tomorrow, I guess it's 8 o'clock our time. It's either 8 or 9 o'clock, one or the other. You can watch him, certainly walk into the courtroom. You can watch the reporters who are in the courtroom who will tell everything about what's going on in there. And then on top of that, they'll draw these sketches that are kind of cute and you'll be able to see what's going on. They're real good at showing you actually the sweat that's coming off of him. I mean, these are great artists. They can let you understand everything about what's going on. They'll show you when he's sleeping because he does sleep in the courtroom. They'll also report to you a great story that we can sort of end the day with. It's one of my favorite stories of the day. There are a lot of good ones, but here's one of my favorite. And this one has to do with Donald Trump screaming hysterically because he can't go to his son's graduation. He's graduating from high school. He says his son has worked very hard. I hope his son hasn't worked as hard as he worked, because, you know, Donald worked hard at stealing exam answers, essays, and all that sort of thing. I mean, this has all been reported so far back. This alone wouldn't compromise him that much because there are some other people who may have done some copying here and there. Joe Biden might be one of them. But here's the thing. It's not the end of the world to have copied a paper in high school or even in college. It's not right. It should be stopped, but it won't destroy anybody. But here's the thing. Donald's kid is graduating from high school, and Donald would like to go. So he says. And he's aggravated because the judge has said you have to be in court. Now, you have to understand this is our court system. This is our criminal justice system. This is what happens when you are accused of a crime. And then you go to court. You go to court. You're accused of a crime. And you must be there when the judge says that you have to be there. If the judge says you have to go to jail, you have to go to jail and wait. Whatever the judge tells you to do, that's what you do. Because once you're accused, you are innocent until proven guilty, but you still must obey the laws as they're implemented through our courts. And you know that there's something called contempt of court. And I know that you understand that Donald has total contempt for our legal system. And in fact, he shows it in the courtroom. He goes in and he calls the judge names and calls the judge's family names and calls everybody names. It's just what he does. We're about to revisit Stormy Daniels here during the 5 or 6 weeks of testimony. He had a name for her. He used to call her Horseface. Of course, his involvement with her is another story altogether. I'm not going to recount it. Let the court tell the story, and they're going to. They're letting it in. It's evidence, and it will be told in court. And so you'll hear all about another person who he has named, in this case, Horseface. But look, here's the point. The point is that Donald's son is going to graduate from high school. Donald would like to go. But what we learned today is that Donald has other children. Now, he may like Barron, that's his son. He may like Barron better than all of his other children. And that's not only understandable because people have favorites sometimes. And on top of that, because he likes Barron best, maybe, he wants to go to Barron's high school graduation. But here's the fact. He has never, in the history of his family, gone to a high school graduation for any other member of his family. None. Zero. He didn't care about it until now. Suddenly, when he's sitting in a courtroom as a criminal defendant, he is so outraged because no one will let him go to his son's high school graduation, an event which he has never attended in the entire history of his family. I mean, he can change his mind now. That's not a problem. That's all right. But, you know, all of this bravado gets a little old and a little stupid. And if he'd asked the judge nicely, he might have let him go, especially if he weren't calling his family names. But listen, here's my name. I'm Mark Kaysen, and this is Showdown. Good night.